Hi, I'm Caitlin. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. My sobriety date is June 17th of 2008, and I was thinking about this earlier. I was talking about it before the meeting, that my first time ever speaking was actually right here. So they were doing something with this room, so we had to go into the huge room, and I was 9 months sober, and my sponsor grabbed me 3 minutes before the meeting, and she was like, "Hey, guess what? You're going to speak," and I lost my brains, and it was probably really bad, but I haven't spoken here since, so welcome back. I grew up in New York. I had an amazing family. They were well-to-do, and you know, I grew up with every opportunity that any normal kid would have. It's funny too, because like I come into the rooms and you see people from every race, every religion, you know, every walk of life, and you know, we all kind of have the same problem, you know. And that's alcoholism, which is just a blessing. But I mean, really, it is. Sounds really terrible when you say it that way. But anyway. I grew up in New York, and I hear people say this a lot, that they just felt really weird growing up. They felt different. They didn't belong. And I definitely related to that. I grew up Jewish. What? I grew up Jewish. My dad was Jewish. My mom was Catholic. And it's funny too, because we weren't a very religious family. We just kind of, we just kind of hung out. I didn't have a strong conception of God when I was a kid. I was just kind of like, whatever. I had this idea that God was some dude in a business suit just hanging out at a desk, which kind of says something about my perception of power. But it was interesting because I was indifferent. I went to school as a kid and I didn't fit in. I was really weird. And I remember, I'm still weird, but I remember from a very young age, I started medicating, you know, whether it was by hiding out in my room, or eating. Food was my first addiction. And it's funny too, because I look back, especially, you know, when I started my drinking, and when it wasn't drinking, it was food, and when it wasn't food, it was drinking. I didn't know exactly what I was doing, but I knew that when I distracted myself by putting something in my body, it made me feel better, and it helped me kind of escape. And my parents worked a lot. We grew up with a lot of nannies. Right around when I was 12, my family up and moved to Florida. And my sister at this time, she's 6 years older than I was. I noticed she went off and she started drinking, and she started, you know, coming home really late, and she smelled like cigarettes when she came home. And it was really weird. It was a weird experience for me, because she and I grew up at a time when, you know, our ages were weird, and we didn't get along that well. At any rate, she had started drinking, and it caused a lot of drama in my family, especially between her and my parents. And she went off to college, and I was left with my mom and dad, and I started school in a new town. We moved to Fort Myers, and first of all, it was weird being new. I already felt weird anyway. I was stuffing with food, and by the time I got to high school, I knew that it was time to drink, and I had this, you know, little kind of ragtag circle of weird friends, and I was like, "Listen, we're in high school now. We should probably drink. You know, this is we're adults." And so the first time I had ever had any alcohol, it was at my friend's house, and we went into his kitchen, really sketchy, and opened up his parents' liquor cabinet, pulled out a bottle of super cheap and disgusting tequila, and there wasn't anything around. I mean, like, we didn't even know what we were doing, so we went into the fridge and grabbed a bottle of orange juice and Perrier. And so we went out and sat in a circle in his front yard, and it was weirdly ritualistic, and we sat down, and we passed it around. And I remember thinking it was really gross. I was like, "This is disgusting. I don't know why people do this." And I mean, it, you know, I hit it, and it was warm, and it was just like, you know. But I mean, at first I was like, "This is disgusting." But then, you know, once the fuzzy part started kicking in, I was like, oh, you know, I finally got it. And all of a sudden, every insecurity I felt, every weirdness I felt, everything that kind of separated me from everybody else just kind of fizzled away. The thing is, I don't have some like epic first drunk experience. It wasn't like I blacked out the first time. It was pretty average. I had a few drinks. I got a little tipsy and I went home. But at the same time, I knew that felt good. I knew that I really liked it, and I knew that I wanted to do it more because everything that made me feel weird just didn't exist, and I wanted so badly to feel like I wasn't separate. So at this point, my sister had dropped out of college, and she came to move home, and I saw her going out a lot, and my relationship with her was tough because she was my only sister, and she and I were really close, and I saw her kind of drifting off. And I remember covering for her a lot. She would kind of sneak out of the house, and I would put pillows under her bed, and I was an artist. You should have seen my work. One night I covered for her. She was getting dressed up. It was like maybe 1 or 2 in the morning, and she said, "Listen, I'll be back in a few hours. I'm going to see some dude." I covered for her, and she didn't come home that night. And my parents were freaking out. Night turned into morning, and they knew she was gone, and I didn't know where she was. I just knew that I had to make up some excuse, and so I stuttered over my words, and finally she showed up, under some circumstances, but and my dad and my, of course, everybody, it was a big moment for me because my dad pulled me aside and I remember him saying, "Please don't ever do this to me." And of course, I was really young. I was maybe 13 or 14. And I knew drinking was like an issue in the family. My grandmother, both grandmothers were alcoholics. My aunt was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. It's a thing, It's not just an idea. It was very real, especially for my mom and dad. So to watch both of us actually go through some tough stuff, it was hard on them. But my dad had said, "Please don't do this. You're a good kid. Please don't do this to me." I was like, "Well, I guess I won't do it. It'll be okay." And I had every intention of, living my life normally, being a good little kid, tying everything up in a nice bow, and it didn't work out that way, obviously, because I'm here. So at one point, my sister, they had finally, my parents, and she, my sister knew, she was going through her own stuff. She went to treatment. As a parting gift to me, I guess, she handed me her ID, her 21-year-old ID, and said, "Bon voyage." And of course, I had this ID, and I was 15, and, all of a sudden, I had the biggest bargaining chip in my life, in my high school, whatever. So I decided to become a hustler, I went to school that day. I remember, and I whipped it out of my wallet, and I was like, "Woo, look what I got, everybody!" And finally, I felt really cool because people were coming up to me like, "Hey, what are you doing this weekend? We got a party. We need some supplies. You want to hook it up?" This was a really good arrangement for me because I knew I liked drinking, I liked money, and I liked being really cool. So who doesn't? But I had this great thing going on for me. I was pretty booked every week. I had people coming up to me, and it was awesome because I got free drinks, and I felt attractive. I had a bunch of guys coming up to me like, "Hey, what are you doing this weekend?" And it was great. It was awesome. Except for the times that it wasn't. And I'm not going to say every time was a total all out bust, because it wasn't. I had some great times while drinking, not every time drinking was a bad time drinking, but every time something bad happened to me, it was because of my drinking. Yes, I got it. So, So I, you know, after that, I started running with this girl who kind of, you know, I like emerged onto the scene after having this idea. It was like my breakout party, you know, because people started finding out who I was. Before then, I, you know, nobody really knew me. Like I said, I was weird. I'm still weird, but after that, I started running with this girl who was really pretty. She was, you know, super petite, had blonde hair, and of course I was, you know, I was awkward. I had brown hair. I was average looking. You know, it was just really, it was uncomfortable. And I felt really cool when I hung out with her. And we went around to every party, and it was amazing. And you know, I started, my parents would go out of town, and I started having parties at my house, and bad things kept happening to me, and I would always get caught, and it didn't even occur to me, you know, and there was this one moment where, you know, my drinking at this point, I had kind of, like, I was awkward, and I remember having a party at my house, and this random people show up at parties every time, and people pass out in random areas, and that's just the way it is. So I had come to, because you don't really wake up from being drunk, you come to every time, and I heard, it was like loud bangs and crashes in my house, and I walk out, and the house is empty except for this one guy who's sitting on our piano bench, and we had a bunch of pictures on the piano bench, and he like shoved them all off, and you know, and of course, like, I'm like, oh my god, not to mention this dude is like butt naked sitting on the couch on the bench, and I mean, like, it sounds funny, but this dude had like emptied out all these piano books from this bench that we had, and he's sitting there naked, and I look at him and I'm like, hello, can you hurry it up and just move along? So he starts peeing on all these books. And I mean, like, it's funny now, but at the moment, it really sucked, because these are the, you know, these were the books that I sat down at the piano with my mom with, and we would play them together, you know? Yeah, it's dark. But like, you know, it was just the first time that I had really seen my drinking, like, directly affect my family. You know, not to mention, my parents had gone through hell with my sister, and I had started kind of, you know, sending bricks their way. I had finally had, you know, had this kind of moment of like, wow, I really should kind of slow this down. But of course I didn't. I kept drinking, and I kept, you know, I mean, I experimented with other things, but drinking, I like to say this, drinking gave me exactly what I wanted, in terms of, you know, whatever. So finally, my sister had come home. My sister had been sober for a period of time, and I remember she showed up in my life and started talking about God, and she started talking about, you know, oh, the 12 steps had really helped me, you know, and I saw her really just start getting it together, and that made me kind of jealous, you know. I saw her really kind of having a steady life. She seemed happy. She seemed kind of normal, and I was not any of those things. I, you know, on the outside, I was a high school kid, but I felt uncomfortable in my own skin, and so finally we had gone out to lunch one day. My sister was visiting, and we had come home, and I passed out in my bed. I had been out drinking the night before, and I was super uncomfortable, and so I went to sleep, and my mom came in at that moment, and she was like, hey, Caitlin, you got to get up, we're gonna have a family meeting, and of course I sat there, and I looked at her, and I was like, just have it without me, it's cool, I'm gonna sleep this off, you know, have a good one. And she was like, get out now. And I said, okay. So I go into the living room, and so my sister and my dad and my mom sat down, and they all looked at me, and I was like, oh shoot. I knew what was happening, but I didn't really know what was happening. My mom was the one who spoke up first, and she was like, hey, you're not the daughter we raised. You know, I don't know who you are. And I immediately was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, I got on the defensive, and it was awkward. And I said to my mom, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just fine. You know, and in my mind, I thought, like, if you guys only stepped off, I would be able to do exactly what I wanted to do. Everyone would be cool, and we wouldn't have any arguments. You know, that was kind of the way that I lived, and the way that I, you know, pictured my life to be. And, I mean, as a result of drinking, I had kind of lost any of my ambitions. Like, the idea of college really wasn't a thing for me. I skipped a lot of class in high school. I didn't do anything. And my idea, I was talking to my sponsor about this the other day. My idea of, like, my future, this storage unit was hiring. And they put out an ad, and I looked at it, and it said free apartment with job. So, of course, my immediate thought was, perfect. I'll have a place to do exactly what I want to do, you know? And of course, I called up all my friends, and I was like, listen, guys, this is really cool. We're out of high school. I'm going to get this apartment and work at a storage place. So, that was the bar that I set for myself, you know? And it's beyond me why a storage unit would offer an apartment with a job. You don't know what kind of people are going to apply. That's just a bad idea. But, you know, at the same time, that's what I pictured as the right way to go, you know? At any rate, we were sitting down and my sister said to me, they brought up rehab. And as soon as they brought that up, I flew. I think I might have levitated. I was so pissed because in my mind, my sister was the one with the problem. She was the one who screwed over my parents a bunch of times. She was the one who did the wrong thing. And I called her out on it. And I said a lot of things that, I wish I hadn't said. But, one of the main things was like, you're the drug addict, not me. You know, you're the one with the freaking problem. If someone had said that to me, it would have sucked, but, I was a really sick person. I didn't really know how to handle things like a normal person would. And a lot of it was clouded by alcohol, but most of it was the fact that I'm an alcoholic, to my core. And it doesn't matter what I put in my body, and it doesn't matter what I don't put in my body. That's who I am. And that's my first knee-jerk reaction is to lash out. I stormed off, I've left things in a really awkward way with my parents, and I peaced out, and I, like, slammed the door in my bedroom, and I started wailing against the wall because I was in such a horrible place, and I was 18 years old, and it was really, really dramatic, and I had honestly thought that my life was over because, when your parents do tell you you're an alcoholic and an addict, that it's a sobering feeling. I was really upset. I was sitting there like a weirdo on the floor, and something came over me, and now I understand it to be my higher power that I should probably go. It was sudden. It wasn't some burning bush experience. I hear a lot of people talk about it. It was just a ping in my mind. Like, this is something that you need. And I came out of my room with my tail between my legs, and I said, okay. So I went to treatment, and it's funny too, because I walked in there, I was 18 years old, and I was really pissed on the inside about what was happening to me, but of course people were coming up to me like, oh, it's so good that you're here at such a young age and you're getting this out early. And I was like, yeah, I know, I'm so happy to be here. And in my mind I was like, no, I really want to go home, I hate it, take me out. It's funny too, because I walked into I had this roommate who she was a really large woman who snored a lot, and I hated her. And so she was like the anti-me at that moment. And she came over and she was like, honey, I'm so proud of you. I didn't understand, and I remember before I went to treatment, my sister had said to me, this is a gift. It really is. And I didn't understand what that meant. Now I do. So anyway, I left treatment, and I didn't work a step for 9 months, which isn't something I recommend to anybody. I stayed dry for 9 months, and part of that 9 months included me going to college. It's funny too, because I moved out. I had gotten into a relationship right off the bat also, which is something I really don't recommend to anybody. I know they say, like, stay out of a relationship for a year, and I think like 2% of people follow that rule. I did. I got into a relationship, and it kept me from doing a lot of stuff, but most importantly, it really shook me when I had to move away, because I hadn't done any work on myself. But I moved to Gainesville for school, and, uh, And it's funny because at the first meeting that I went to, I was scared, I was nervous, but someone I didn't know came up to me and said, "Hey, are you new? Why don't you come sit with me?" Which is something that I've experienced at every Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that I've been to. It's not something that is, you know, you show up and everyone's like, "Oh, what's up?" Whatever. It's not how it goes here, you know. And what I've learned through my experience in these rooms is that, you know, I'm responsible for making sure the hand is Oh, good, I'm bad at remembering things. When the hand of AA needs to be there for that, I'm responsible, basically, you know. And honestly, it's been a privilege to kind of pay that forward, because I know that somebody along the line looked at me and said, "Wow, she really needs a hand." So anyway, I mean, I went to school and I moved back here and started working some steps with the sponsor. And I didn't know how I felt about God, really. It was a weird relationship for me, because God was kind of like a non-existent. And through my drinking, I had kind of been like, I don't think I really need that. And I considered myself an atheist. And finally, when my sister came home, I've said this before, she literally had a chakra stick and brought it over to me and was like, "This is my God tool." And I thought that was the idea of like God and AA for me. I was like, there are chakra sticks everywhere and everyone has them, and you know, and like you hang out with them, whatever. So anyway, admitting that I was powerless was kind of tough, especially because I was so young. But I remember talking to my sponsor about it and being like, "Look, you know, I didn't really have that much experience." Oh, 15 minutes. What? It was strange to think that at such a young age I had given up all power over alcohol. But at the same time, you know, I knew in a part of me that I didn't feel right when I drank. Something about me was different. People looked at me in parties and went, "You know, that's not something that normally happens." But I finally came to that realization after some work. It wasn't like a magic flash and I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm powerless, whatevs." Anyway, it was a long process, but finally when I was able to see, you know, my patterns and basically, you know, decide that I was an alcoholic and that I belonged here, it was a really cool, you know, it was a cool thing for me to do. Meanwhile, I got to the third step with my sponsor, and she, you know, it was about turning things over to God, and that was a little weird to me, because the idea of God and giving things over was something I had never talked about with anybody. I struggle with it now. In fact, I have something going on at work that I hate. And it scares me. And it's funny too, because after years of experience, I know that turning things over to a higher power makes it okay, but I still fight it. You know what I mean? I still fight these things, and I didn't know what turning it over really meant, you know, and now, through some experience, I know that it means letting it go and kind of hoping for the best. And that doesn't mean that I don't try to do as much action as I can on things, because, you know, part of being in God's will and not my own is taking action, taking a step forward and throwing things out into the universe. And if they happen, great. And if not, I have to learn to be okay with that. Because if I'm not, then I'm back in the same place I was when I was drinking, when I was, you know, stealing money from my parents, when I was, you know, lashing out at my sister. I'm back in that place. And it's funny too, because I hear it from everybody, just let go and let God. And, you know, I mean, that AA slogan really just kills me, because, you know, I mean, it's hard, but, you know, every time I've done it in my experience, and there have been times in sobriety when I've really needed to let shit go. Ooh, excuse me. By the time I did, it ended up being all right. So anyway, whatever. I did a fourth step with my sponsor, and there's a lot of hype surrounding the fourth step. Like, you know, oh, it's really scary to delve into your past, and, you know, there's a lot of really dark things that I don't want to admit to anybody. And, you know, I mean, to be honest, it sucks looking back at that kind of stuff, but it's one of the most important things I ever did, because it taught me about it, and I had this idea that the fourth step was like just being pissed at everybody that hurt me, you know? And I even thought before I did the fourth step, I was like, man, I'm not resentful of that many people. I don't hate many people. And I remember making my first list and being like, I was wrong, you know? And so, you know, doing that inventory and kind of taking that out taught me about my character defects, and I remember sharing it with my sponsor, and she sat down with me, looked over all the things that I had put down on that list, and related to every single one of them. Everything I put down, including all my fears, including every resentment I had, she found something and she pointed it out and she said, "Oh my God, that happened to me. Here's what happened in my case." And I mean, it was eye-opening because I had until that point separated myself from everyone in AA, thinking I was too young, thinking I didn't, you know, I didn't really know what my problem was yet, and I wasn't really ripe, you know. And you know, I remember her, she was my age, and she looked at all of those things and she said, "Yes, I've been there too. This is how I got through it." And that was the most amazing thing for me, was connecting with someone who knew exactly what I had been through and who knew a solution to that problem. And so finally, you know, I had gone to a meeting that night. I went to Red Door after she and I had done that stuff together. And for the first time in all of AA, I felt like I had really earned my seat. You know, I felt like I knew what everyone was talking about when they said that they set you free here. You know, and of course I was like floating around, and then, you know, I wanted to like bestow my AA knowledge upon everyone who would listen. So the sixth and seventh step was an interesting experience because I'd never meditated before. So I Googled it. I Googled how to meditate for my sponsor. My sponsor gave me this assignment. She was like, "Okay, so these are your character defects. We met up at Starbucks." She was like, "I need you to meditate." And I was like, "I don't know how the fuck to do that, you know." And so I Googled it, and I came up with this fabulous idea, and I pitched it to her while the two of us were sitting together at Starbucks. And it's called cathartic dancing. And I said to her, I said, "So here's what I'm going to do." And what you're supposed to do when you cathartically dance, I guess, is to, like, move all your furniture out of the way. And you put on tribal music and you just freely dance however you feel like you need to dance. And of course, I mean, like, and this is, and I brought this. I was like, "I got this. This is going to be so in. I don't have to sit alone at all." Because it made me uncomfortable, the idea of, like, sitting alone for however long and, like, being alone. That was really weird. So obviously the more rational thing to do would be blare African tribal music and dance around in a crazy way. So, I pitched it to her. She sat across the table from me like this. And she goes, "No, you can't do that." And so I was like, "Okay, that really sucks." She was like, "Listen, dude, just be alone with God." She put that out there for me, and she said, "Be alone with God." And I was like, "I don't know what that means." She said, "Talk out loud if you need to." And so the first time that I really kind of, you know, opened it up was, I was driving home from seeing her, and I was in my car, and I started talking out loud. It started out kind of like this: "Hey, it's me. What's up? How's it going? I'm driving home. This feels really weird. I don't like it so much. You know, I don't know, whatever." So fine. I mean, like, eventually, after a series of words, I kind of calmed down. You know, I got home and I shut all the doors, and I made it silent, and I took a bath, and it was just, I took a bath, and I it was interesting because it was the first time in my entire life that everything was just quiet. You know, I had spent my entire life just rotating around all these insecurities and all this, you know, all of this craziness, and you know, the fact that I wasn't good enough, the fact that I wasn't strong enough, I wasn't smart enough, and you know, it was the first time in my life that I sat alone and I was like, "Everything is okay," you know, and I was able to finally in my life just be alone with God and myself. And you know, and it's funny too, because I haven't been in that spot a lot since that time. You know, that I feel like that, you know, at that particular moment, it was exactly what I needed. But you know, in those times when I can have that quiet and when I can be alone, it's really special. You know, so I moved on from that point, and I started making amends to people, including my parents. And my sponsor had me write a little letter. She had me write a couple letters, actually. One of them was to my dad, one to my mom, you know, all the letters, you know. And you know, I sat down with my mom and she read it, you know, and then the tears flowed, and it was really weird for me to kind of admit that I, you know, I had been a huge douche. You know, I mean, at that moment, I kind of, it was real what I, you know, what I had been through, and the fact that my mom had looked at me and she was like, I'm just glad that you're yourself. You're the daughter that I raised, and I'm proud to look at you and call you my own. And that was, you know, and of course I cried, and we all cried, and it was just estrogen filled and awesome. So anyway, you know, I moved on through the rest of the steps, and I, you know, one of those things was helping another alcoholic, and that, sponsoring other girls, I mean, I don't sponsor anybody now, but when I was sponsoring for a while, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever done, because one thing that I like to say, and I really view AA as like this kind of river that flows, you know what I mean? And when I say things to other people in this program, I'm not saying anything that originated from myself. Nothing I say here, except I don't think I'm probably the only person speaking who ever said estrogen while they were speaking. But, you know, I'm not coming up with this, you know. It's something that someone told me along the line. And that's what's so amazing about this program is that everything that I heard was told to that person and that, you know, from generations of AAers. And that's what's so amazing about it is that, you know, it just exists alone in itself. This program and what's passed along to everybody else has been given so freely to them, you know, that they keep coming back. And that is a gift, and that's the gift of this program is that, you know, it's free. It's here for you if you need it. You know, it's here. Well, I always need it, but like, you know, I mean, it's perfectly imperfect and amazing. And, you know, it's, being at a young people's meeting is especially cool because I was young when I got sober and I thought that my life was over. I really did. I thought it was over. I thought I'd never have a good time again. I thought that things were just going to nosedive from there and I was going to live my life as a cardboard box. And clearly that's not the case. You know, I meet people who are some of the most interesting people I've ever met, people who give me more than I could have ever asked for. I mean, the amazing thing about coming in so young, and I didn't get this when people said this to me in the beginning, is that I get to follow my dreams. I get to chase my dreams because I got sober young, you know, it's incredible. You know, I'm in a job that I hate right now, but really I like it, you know, it's incredible, and it's not about the job, it's not about all that, it's the fact that I get to have real relationships with people, and I get to be a human being among other human beings. I'm not some super comet flying in and just saving everybody. That's not how it is, it's not how it goes. It's the fact that I can exist and be, you know, be a contributing member of society among everyone else, and I get to follow my dreams. That's the most amazing part about it all, is that, you know, being young in recovery is the biggest gift that was ever given to me, and I didn't understand that until, you know, I started working with a sponsor, I started talking to God, and I started, you know, doing what they told me to do in these rooms, you know. And it seems like a lot, but it's a simple program. It's a simple program for complicated people. That's what I learned, and that's what I have gained by being here. And anyway, I love AA. I'm 24 years old. If it sucked, I would not be here. It's as simple as that. If this life sucked, I wouldn't keep doing it. So anyway, that's all I have. Thank you.